Okay, gentlemen, we've got a brand new Masechet this morning. Very, very exciting. And we start our Masechet Idiot. There's some question about how to pronounce the name of the Masechet. Because it's a play on words, essentially. Because this is always called, in Aramaic, this is always called Bechirta, right? The Tanakh, even the Tanakh, Bechirta Kavatz, Bechirta Kavatz, as we've had many times. So Bechirta is the word for idiots, right? Because that's the karka idis. When you're going to collect the best, is called the mufchar, Bechirta. So that would imply to pronounce the name in the Masechet, idiot, the best. But the truth is that the whole Masechet, it's obviously a play on words, right? So the whole Masechet is based on Heidu. All of the cases of the Oso Hayom, that Oso Hayom, remember, was not Oso Hayom, rather Bo Bayom. That Bo Bayom was the day in which Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed to be the new Nasi, and he was only 18 years old, and Ariani mentioned Rim Shana, the whole story, beautiful story. And he took the place of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel was very tough, and he wouldn't allow people who was not Tocho Kevoro to come into the Beis HaMedrash at all, which was a marvelous idea, but it, as you can imagine, very much cut down on the number of people who could come into the Beis HaMedrash. So Bo Bayom, that they opened up the floodgates and everybody would come in, even though they didn't have the proper midas and so on. So there were a lot of people. And everyone who had heard something and was Mekabel Halacha came to be made on that day in the Sanhedrin, which was in Barnea's neighborhood on that day in Yavne. And they were Koveya, all of those halachas. So they are the best because Besim was Mekabel them, but they're also Idiot. So this is Idiot, Idiot. Both of them are proper ways of pronouncing the name of the Masechet. So let us start with our Perek Aleph, our Mishnah Aleph in Masechet Idiot. Oh gosh, we got to press record here. Today's Mishnah, Masechet Idiot, is Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph. Kol isha sheyesh la veset daya sha'ata. This is starting at the beginning means I should give you an introduction because we haven't learned to need us for a while. So remember that we've got a halacha of nidais as soon as a woman is re'adam, she becomes tmeya. Anything that she touched is obviously going to be tame. She's a surah to sleep with her husband and so on. She has to wait until the end of her period, 7 days, and then she goes to the mikveh, and then she becomes tahar. Now, she becomes tmeya at the moment that the dam is yotze min harechem, and it even goes into the vagina, but it may be held in the vagina for a while because of the labia. It's not so easy for the dam. It's a small amount of dam. It might have been there for a while. So now the question is, when she finally is rea this dam, when going backwards in time, from what time do we have to be choshesh that this dam was actually there before she noted it, and therefore she was actually a nida from that time? Now, the truth is, there is no such halacha, mi'ikar hadin, because she has to be roe the dam that is yotze migufa before she really becomes tmeya for sure. But what we're talking about over here, as the Gemara ends up explaining, is a chumra legabe taharot and only legabe taharot. So if she came into contact with truma or with kachim, then those truma of a kachim would not be allowed to be eaten. You couldn't burn them. Couldn't burn them because it's only a suffix. And therefore, we would be machmer bin rabbanan to be not able to utilize this truma and kachim. This is the only din that we're talking about. We're not talking about any type of retroactive tuma on stam, things that she touched, on chulin. So now the question is, how far back, retroactively, do we have to worry that maybe she was really tmeya before? So Shammai says, not at all. Kol hanashim Dayan Shatan, any woman who finds Dom, when she finds the Dom, we don't have to be worried about anything before that. There's no retroactive tuma, and therefore anything that she touched even a minute before, even if it's Tyrus or Truma, is still Tahar. Masha Inkein, Hillel Omer, this is a Chumra of Hillel, that she is Tmeya from Mipkida Lipkida. From the last time that she checked, at this point that she knows that she's Tmeya, and she doesn't know at what point her situation changed to be Tmeya. So this is like those sveikas, is what Gemar brings up, a mikveh that gradually was going down. Remember how far back do you have to worry that it didn't have arbaim saw? All those types of sveikas, which the Gemara and Nida actually interrelates with why it's different than here. But in any event, the amount of time would be all the way back till the last time that she made bedika. So mipkida lipkida, it's talking about a bedika that she had made. I don't care how long it is. Feel yomim harbe. It could be 3 weeks as far as I'm concerned. We have no idea when she was last tahar until it gets to the time that we do know. And that was the last time she made a bedika. So anything afterwards that was tyrus that she touched afterwards would be tame. And now you'd have to go back and be metame anything that she had touched in the interim. V'chachamim omrim, lo kidivrei zeh v'lo kidivrei zeh. Neither of these opinions are correct. Shammai is too megil, and Hillel is too machmir. So therefore, what we say is, look, a maximum of 24 hours would be the time that we concede that we have to worry that maybe she had been Rayadam and it had never gotten to the outside of her body where she would see it. And this is, I remember that there's a lot of complicating factors here. This was an opening sugya nida. The question is whether Dam is really mitame just because she bleeds, or whether there needs to be a hargosha together with that Dam. And if there's no hargosha, there's no real din of tumas nidas and so on. This is an extremely complex and involved sugya. We're looking at only this particular issue, as far as the dinim of chazokas that are concerned and the dinim of dam that are concerned, Bezrat Hashem, we will soon be reaching Maseches Nida, and we'll go into the details then. So the Chachomim say, it makes sense to put a maximum on. So up to a maximum of 24 hours in the past, we can be chayshesh that the dam was there, and that therefore we'll give it this din of tuma. Benogei atiris, remember, not benogei anything else. And if she had done a pekida, meaning that there was a bedika of dam, in less than 24 hours, then obviously whatever comes first. So whatever is the less amount of time, that's what we will be machmer on, up to a maximum of 24 hours. So the mi'et le'et is mima'etet, the pekida le'pekida, and the pekida le'pekida is mima'etet, the mi'et le'et. Now, in the event that she has an actual period that is reliable, not the loose use of the word period, which is just, I don't know, she has a monthly menses. That's not a period in the Gemara. A veset means that it's a veset kavua, that at such and such a day, she always will be reya. At this particular point in the day, she's reya. So then we are not chayish that she was reya outside of that time, and therefore, daya shaita. Since we know this is the time when she is always reya, we never are choshesh. Maybe this time she was reya before, because she has a chazoka, that is kavua al yedei, three different re'iyas, or three different gaps, whatever the type of veset it is, and therefore, everybody is made of that for sure. That's okay. Now, how about a mishameshet be'edim? So someone who is mitsuya with taharos, this is a woman who eats truma, she's a bas kohen, or she's married to a kohen, or she has kachim. So there's a chumra that she always has to check herself, but to make sure she's not a nida, before she sleeps with her husband, she does a bedika, and after she sleeps with her husband, she does a bedika. The bedika that she does before is not considered to be the equivalent of a real pekida. because she does that. She's excited about sleeping with her husband. And because of that, she's just going to do a very casual kind of bedikah. That's not a good enough bedikah to be koveya. But even though you would think that doing a bedikah after intercourse is not a very good bedikah, because remember, a bedikah is meant to pick up even tipas dam kechardal, the slightest amount of blood, which would be metameher. After intercourse, there's no way she's going to pick up a tiny bit of blood because there's so many fluids that that blood is going to get mixed up in. There's no way you're going to see that on a bedikah. But nonetheless, we accept a post-intercourse bedikah as the equivalent of a normal pekida. And therefore, even that would be mima etet, yad mi eight le eight, yad mi pkida le pkida, like the Chachamim say. It's not only a real examination that she would make, which is a serious bedikah, bechorin, upsitakim, and so on. That is a very real procedure. We'll even accept a post-coital edim as being mima etet, ayade mi eight le eight, ayade, Mipkida lipkida, and therefore, according to the Chachomim, that would be the shir. Perek Aleph Mishnah Beit Masechet Idiot. We move on now to a completely different sugya. And remember, idiot is a very mixed bag of different idiot. And here, the opening Mishnayos are related by the fact that we have Shammai, Hillel and the Chachomim in these Mishnayos saying like neither Shammai veHillel. So that gives a particular structure to the opening Mishnayos. Now, this is a bit complex, probably worthwhile for you to take out a pencil and paper. Remember what a pencil is like? They used to make this, it's like a wooden thing that has something that marks inside. They used to use them before, in the ancient days, before they had writing tools, simple writing tools like computers and stuff like every child has in kindergarten. They used to have these sticks. Oh, excellent, excellent. So Akiva is showing us a pencil. So take out one of those and a piece of paper because it's a little bit complicated. So let's start just with the statements. How much is the amount of dough that you need to take off challah from? That's the question. So Shammai says, look, you have to take off what the Torah says is arisotechem, because the Pasuk says, reshit arisotechem is challah. So that the reshit arisotechem, what was the arisa? What was the amount of dough that was made in the midbar? Well, that was defined by the amount of man, that everybody got exactly the same amount of man. So that defined the standard arisa. You can't talk about a standard arisa nowadays. I mean, it depends on what you're baking or how much challah you want to make. But here we know what the arisa was. So we know that everybody got an asirita efa, that it says beferish in the Torah. So there's no question of the haomer asirita ifahu. That's a pasuk. We know what that amount is. And therefore, when it says, adavara shetzivash em liktu mimenu ish lefi ochlo, omer legogolet, the haomer asirita ifahu, then that means that was the amount of food that was given to each individual for a day. Now, Shammai says, but that means that when you made something out of the man, that man, since it was good for your early meal in the day and your later meal in the day, has to be split into two, because you're going to be making two different things. Maybe you'll be making challah in the morning, and which, of course, we call challah challah because of this Gemara, and maybe you'll be making in the afternoon teglach, I don't know, but certainly not going to make it all in one time necessarily. So when the Torah said asirita efa, that asirita efa has to be split into two. Fine. Now, we know, if we're going to understand how much an efa is, then we have to first just get clear what the units are that the Gemara is going to be, the Mishnah is going to be talking about over here. So we start with our basic unit. Basic unit that everyone used was one egg, a beitzah. Of course, we have all the machlokas in about what is a beitzah in modern measurements. Was it the same size beitzah and so on? We're going to see that that's nogea even in the Zman of the Mishnah, that there were choshesh, that there was a change in the amount that a beitzah was. But forget about how much it is in our terms. We start off with one basic unit called the beitzah. Then if you put six of those together, you end up with one lug. Four lug are going to be a kav. So that means four times six beitzim, 24 beitzim make one kav. 18 of those kavim, in other words, that's 18 times 20, the times the four lug, that would mean 72 lug, 18 times the four, or times the 24 in terms of the number of beitzim, would be 432 beitzim, would equal one epha. Now, all of this is going to end up being very important, which when we get down to the actual eggs and portions of eggs. So keep that in mind, write it down. Okay. So then if everybody got an asirit epha, as we just explained, every epha has 18 cups. So that would mean an asirit epha would be 1.8 of those kavim. But before we even discuss that, what does asirit mean? Because remember, we've got a major question in the way that the Torah measures. Let's say we say you should be mosif a chomesh, right? Be mosif a chomesh on what it is that you owe. What does that mean? Does it mean a chomesh of the total, which would be 1/6 of, does it mean a chomesh of the original amount, which is 1/6? Does it mean a chomesh of the total from the outside? So one is called a milib bar if it's measured from the outside. So to get a chomesh, you would take a quarter, would be 25%, which when that's appended to the total amount would be one chomesh. Or does it mean a chomesh mi bifnim, which would be only 1/6 of the total, correct? That you see that clearly, correct? Split up a pizza into these different pieces and you can illustrate it for yourself, just in case you need the Gemara for dummies. Always good to have pizza pies to cut up for fractions. Okay. But the same thing is true, as not many people know, when you're talking about the other direction, a tenth. So if you're talking about less, what does that a tenth mean? Does it mean a tenth mibifnim? In which case the Asir Sa'efa would be 1.8. Or is a tenth mean a tenth of when you haven't added the extra amount at the end, which would mean a tenth of a total, including that tenth, which would mean that an asiris ha'efa would be two, because two would be the total, including the tenth. So now it would be 1/8 of the, 1/10 of the total of the asiris ha'efa, in which case it would be two. So that would mean, this is how Beit Shammai holds, that if we're talking about, first of all, Shammai holds that it's milig bar and not milig gav. So it's milig, if it's milig gav, it's the way nowadays we talk. We talk about a tenth. We talk about 1.8 out of 18. But if you're talking about milig gav, you're talking about 2 out of 18, which then represents a tenth of the 20. Is that 2? So first of all, Shammai holds that we go according to milib bar. And secondly, Shammai holds that we split it into two because of the fact that there were two different meals. Therefore, what are you left with? One kav. 1/10 is that one kav is the asiris ha'efa, which becomes 20, split into two, which gives us two per day, one per meal. And that's asirit ha'efa, one kav. So one kav gives you the amount of challah that you're going to have to take. Hillel says, no, It's two cups because I agree with you about all the other issues, namely that we're talking about Mila Bar and not Mila Gav. The only thing I disagree with you about is that the Torah means to split it up into the number of meals that you have a day. It doesn't say that. It is based on the only figure that's given in the Torah, and that is Asirit Ha'ifah. So Asirit Ha'ifah is two cups, exactly like Shammai holds, except for that one single issue. So therefore, it turns out to be Mikabayim. Now, where the complexity begins is here. Because the Chachamim, they disagree with both, but they give their values not in the measurements of the Midbar. They give their values in other measurements. And let's talk about what those other measurements are. So in the Midbar, the amounts that we spoke about are the way that it was very simple. The interrelationship was very simple. After coming into Eretz Yisrael, there was a re-evaluation of the Midot, and the Kav ended up being larger so that the Asirit Ha'ifah would then be smaller in modern Kavs because the amount of eggs in that Kav would be different than in the original. So those were called, after they added 1/6, which is actually 1/5, because it's also Mila Bar, so 1/5 increase, was now the new measuring system. That new measuring system was called the Midot HaYerushalmiot, just in honor of Yerushalayim. That was the center of the Yishuv, and that's when they made the new Midot. The original Midot were called the Midbariot, the way that it was in the Midbar. Those were 1/5 bigger than the ones in the Midbar. So that would mean that each unit that we're talking about in the Yerushalmi measurement would be 1 plus an additional 1/5, right? So it would be 1.2 of the Midbariot. So how do you get from the Midbariot into the more modern units, which are the Yerushalmiot? You would simply multiply what the amount was by 5/6. And that would give you the new amount, which is going to be in the same, if you're using the same words for the units, but those units are bigger, then to get the exact amount that would be in there, you would multiply by 5/6, because 5/6 of an old kav, of the new kav, equals the full kav of the old kav, right? Because it's bigger by that additional 1/5. So that would mean that originally, we said before, that you would have 1.8. So that would be 1 and there's 4/5, 8/10. 1.8 is 1 plus 8/10. So in terms of fractions, it would be 1 and 4/5, right? Is this very clear, Barney? I know you love to get mixed up with anything that has to do with numbers. You've been writing this down?
Writing it down, and I don't understand why we're not multiplying by 6/5. Why by 5/6?
Because we're making it less. Since the new measurement includes more, you need less of the new measurement to get the same amount of man that you had in the Midbar, right? If you'll take the new measurement, you're going to end up with more man. Only the cheaters did that if they wanted to get more man, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu never went along with them because it says the maximum you could collect with all of your Barnea tricks and math never fooled the Shekhinah, and you ended up with the same amount of man. So if you want to know how much it's going to, in the new units, it's going to be less of the new units because each new unit includes more. Does that make sense? Okay. So now we have to understand that what the Chachomim are about to do is very confusing because besides the machlokas that they have about the issues that we discussed before, they also talked about the way in which it's registered in the new units. And what's even worse is that there are hyper new units because then they re-evaluated again by an additional 5th, which is a 6th. They re-evaluated the units in which were called the Tsuri units, which was the center at that time. So these
Rebbe
were,
means Tzipori.
I meant Tzipori, sorry. These were the midos of Tzipori, as Barnea knows from it being his neighborhood. These were the midos of Tzipori, and these were, at that time, that was the main center, and so we called them the midos of Tzipori. So then that would mean one Tzipori kav would be equal to one plus an additional fifth Yerushalmi kavs, which are equal themselves to one and a fifth Midbariot kavs. So this means that if we're going to translate it into the current values, we have to take into consideration two re-evaluations of the Midbari, one into the Yerushalmi and one into the Tzipori. So Chachamim say that actually, lo k'divrei zeh v'lo k'divrei zeh. First of all, we disagree. It's actually a kav u'mechtza. It's one and a half kavim. So that sounds like sort of a compromise, you know, between one of Shammai and two of Hillel. No, it's not a compromise. It has nothing to do with a compromise. Let's make the cheshbon of how it is that the Chachamim came out with such a number, okay? So when they say that, first of all, if it says Asirisa Eifa, it does not mean Mila Bar. It means Mila Gav. And therefore, a tenth of an Eifa is 1.8, not two. That's the first thing that we disagree both with Shammai and with Hillel. So it means that it's 1.8, which equals 1 4/5. 8/10 is 4/5. But the kav that we're talking about when we say 1.8 kavs is not the kav of the kav Hamidbari, because those were smaller units. And then when we came to Eretz Yisrael, we added a chomesh, which means that one kav of Yerushalayim is actually equal to one and an additional fifth of the Midbari. So as I pointed out before, if you're going to tell me, let me convert the Midbari into Yerushalmi, how much would I need to equal the same amount of content? I multiply by 5/6, which reduces, by multiplying by 5/6, it reduces the original number by this one of the fifths in the end, right? So before I had 6/6, which is one, and now I have 5/6. Okay? So that would mean that each person got mun, which used to be 1.8, that is 1 4/5. Now it equals the Yerushalmi 1.5, because if I multiply 1 4/5, you can do this right now on that piece of paper. 1 4/5 are 9/5, and I multiply that by 5/6. Go right ahead and do that. What do you get? 1.5, which is 1.5. That's how the Rabbanan came out, saying what seems to be a simple compromise, but actually involves this complex calculation, because they're putting it into the Kavim HaYerushalmiot. Okay, clear so far? The rest of the Mishnah we will do tomorrow, because we've already gone way beyond our time, and it's a little bit more complex to deal with the hyper change of the Midas, which would take the number of Midas, which gets into more detail of the number of Beitzim, and that's a little bit more complicated. We'll finish it up tomorrow, giving you a chance to look carefully at the calculations here. This is, you know, fourth grade math, maybe fifth grade math. It should not present any kind of problem in doing this. Multiply the numerator times the numerator, the denominator 10 times the denominator, and then go ahead and simplify the fraction, and you end up with 1.5. Okay? So 1.5, I should say. If you
Rebbe
want.
smiling, I looked at it and said, I don't remember how to do this.
So I just told you how to do it.
Yes, I would appreciate the reminder.
Okay, great. All right then. So a wonderful beginning to a fascinating new Masechet, which meanwhile kept the missiles at bay and gave us the extra time that we needed. There never was an alarm. It was all for others, maybe Arab villages, but certainly not to affect B'nai HaBaka and learning Torah. Thank you, everybody. Bezras Hashem, we should have the Surah Tovot more and more. Definitely getting very exciting. Go through.